It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Well, gentlemen, we are about, 5 days away? By the time this comes out, it'll probably be upon us, but iPhone X pre-order date is in just a few short days. You guys excited?
Woohoo!
It's about time. My phone is just dies so fast now. It needs replaced.
Got to get that $99 battery replacement that you get under Apple Care for your phone within the period. I know the feeling. Mine was dying for a while, but the battery life seems to have stabilized a little bit. I guess 1102 helped me out a little bit. Yeah, I'm really expecting this. The sad thing is I'm going to be out of town when the new phone. If let's say that I do order on the 27th and it arrives on the 3rd, I will be out of town when it arrives, which kind of stinks. So I wouldn't even get mine till like the 6th at the earliest.
I'm honestly trying not to get too excited about it because I'm really worried that even if I order it 2:03 a.m., you know, or 2:01 a.m., I'll be lucky if I see this phone by Christmas. I mean, as much horror stories as I've heard about delays in this part or that part or this, that, and the other, and now they're kissing you Apple loyalty upgrade people's butts. So, yeah, who knows what'll happen for us Verizon folks. They're going to send us, like, iPhone 5s.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of faith in the number of devices that Verizon's getting sent. One thing that's even started crossing my mind, because I'm so anxious to actually get my hands on one of these phones, is would I actually settle for a 64 gig over a 256 on launch day if that's the only thing that was available?
All I can say is the first year Apple upgrade folks that did this, who got screwed last year when the 7 launched, where they really mucked up that process horribly, it seems like they fixed all of that this time, so I'm really excited. I'll be able to pre-qualify starting tomorrow, get everything ironed out. And I did this with the 8 as well. My wife wasn't on the upgrade program, but because I am and I was putting it on my account, I was able to do the pre-qualify for the loan, pretty much place everything in the bag so that when I got up to go and order it on Friday morning, it was literally just, you know, submit, check out. So I'm excited about this. I still don't think that I'll necessarily get it on launch day, just seeing how the shortages, I guess they were saying there's not enough supply to cover the launch day, but it won't be for a lack of trying. I can tell you that much. If nothing else, I'll be able to hit it. And I'm so glad that I did not do the carrier upgrade. So glad I did not do the carrier upgrade. I feel bad for you guys.
I don't even know how that works because this is my first year. Do I have to order it through Verizon now, or can I get my Verizon upgrade if I order through Apple? I have no idea.
So I did it last year and I've got Verizon. The way that it worked is you actually have to go to Verizon's site, order the device, and then within 2 to 3 weeks after you've gotten the device, you actually receive a box in the mail that you're supposed to take your old device, put it back in, and ship it back to them in a prepaid, labeled box.
Okay, so I would have to order through Verizon on Friday morning. Okay, well, that's good to know. Thank you, Jason.
That is correct. Yep. Well, one of the things that surprised me this week, I went to visit a buddy who I was just convinced that he was absolutely going to wait for the iPhone X, and he pulls out an 8 Plus out of his pocket. You know, he kind of had a last minute change of heart, feeling like he could not give up the home button, right? And I'm wondering if I'm going to be in that same camp as well, that, you know, am I going to get the 10 and then wish I had that familiar piece of home in my hand?
Sorry, the only thing that crossed my head was, is that an iPhone 8 Plus in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
I don't think you're going to regret losing the home button. If you don't do it this year, chances are you'll do it the year after. I mean, that's the thing. And the reality is, if you go ahead and you get the 10, you don't like it, the 8 or the 8 Plus will be easy to get, right? It's not going to be like it's going to be tough to come by.
Supposedly they're really easy to get. Like, please come get one. Anybody, please.
See, I'm not sure that I believe the stories that came out in the last week saying that the 7 and the 7S are still outpacing the 8 and the 8S, right? At this point, there's kind of a minimal price difference between the two. If this was June of next year, right, I could see that there being a bigger price gap. I think it's $150. The upgrades of the camera, the new style, you know, just the compelling reasons to even own the new version. I'm just not sure that we're getting good statistics coming out of those surveys at this point.
you got to remember the average person isn't like us. If you send the average person in to buy a computer at Best Buy, right, they're not going to necessarily pay attention between like a 2015, 2016, and 2017 MacBook, right? They may go for the latest one. They may not. I've had friends reach out to me like, should I get the 8 or should I just get a 7? Or should I get the 10? I don't even know. And you know, it's, to some people, it's not as big a deal.
They don't walk into Best Buy and go to the most expensive computer they have in the place and then work their way down from there. They do it from the other direction. They're like, how much can I pay to get what I really need or I think I need? They don't start of like, how much is it going to cost me to get the best? It's, let's start from the bottom and like, okay, the bottom doesn't do me. What's the next step up? Okay, I can pay for that. Like, what's the minimum best device I can get? You know, that kind of thing. I don't even know the word for it, but I'm pretty sure they start from the other direction.
I agree with where you're going with that, but almost everybody now is on some kind of payment plan, right? I don't know of anybody that's really just going in and saying, here's my $900 cash, give me a new phone, right? So if you're looking at a $150 price difference spread out or at least amortized over 24 months, you know, that's like $6.25 a month. So if somebody's, you know, in Best Buy and they can have the latest and greatest for, you know, $27 a month versus 35, what's really the big difference there?
I hear you there. I mean, when you put it in those terms, it makes sense.
Well, I mean, we're outliers, right? That's something that we have to remember. We're not like most people. We don't think like most people. But I do believe there's a large contingent of people that are holding off on trying to get the 10. It doesn't even strike me as a bad thing if the 7 is outpacing the 8, because the people that are really inclined to go and upgrade right now want the new hotness. They're not wanting something else. If all we had gotten was the 8 and the 8 plus, I think the sales would be a lot better. But because the 10 exists and they know it's coming, and I think, you know, they really didn't have a choice in doing this, but they've had to stagger those release dates. And I think that helps a lot, because those who wanted an 8 or an 8 plus who would have been just fine with that have had like a 6-week lead time to go ahead and get those. So that'll hopefully thin some of the demand for the 10. Not much, but you know, every little bit helps if we're trying to get it on launch day.
Yeah, and I mean, of course I was joking about the stupid comment. It's more of just, they just don't give a damn. I mean, that's really just it. It's like, okay, this will do me. You know, it's fine. Most people I know like that, they don't even want to upgrade the one they got. They think the phone they have is fine. The only reason they might be upgrading is because their battery is not lasting as long, or you know, they're not covered under any kind of warranty anymore. So, okay, let's go ahead and upgrade to my phone. What can I do that's nicer than this one? But, you know, I'm still not, you know, getting the nicest thing out there, because it's like they don't want the nicest thing out there. It's like, I, you know, I don't need that. I don't want to go there. They feel like it might be more complicated or something like that. I think especially with the 10, you know, if they look at that phone and it doesn't have a home button, you know, is it, how is that, you know, I've gotten used to that kind of thing. I mean, I don't know. It's a weird problem to have. I mean, and if you're Apple, I think if as many people are upgrading to other devices as would be going to the 8, then they probably make more money off the 7S's than they do the 8 at this point, just from the volume, you know, the production that they've put in time at with the 7S's. And they actually probably make more money off the older devices when they're selling them, at least for now. This has been discussed ad nauseum everywhere. They're going to sell these 10s probably about twice as fast or more than they can make them. So, I mean, Apple will be just fine. I mean, it's the problem here is not necessarily the lack of demand for the 8. It's that they won't be able to meet demands for the 10. So that profit might be coming in 3 or 4 months or 5 months later when they can finally catch up with everybody that actually wants one.
That's a very strong point, Jim.
Think about the number of people who go out and buy a car in like the September, October timeframe when the next year's models are starting to roll out, and they'll buy a car that's the current year model or even the previous year or whatever, and pay no consideration to, well, you know, it's October and the new cars are going to be out like 2 weeks or whatever for the next model year. I'm just going to wait another couple of weeks and do that. A lot of people won't do that. So again, we're kind of outliers, I think, here, but I don't think, as long as you're buying an iPhone and not an Android, I don't think Apple cares which one. From a form factor, they're the same form factor for the 8 and the 7. And it's probably not a hard thing for them to make at this point, even with the new technology, right? Still the same form factor. I don't look at it as necessarily a bad thing at all.
They probably got people that can make those 7S's in their sleep now.
Probably. So there was an article a couple of weeks ago on Marco Arment's blog called The Impossible Dream of USB-C, and I really, really, really appreciated reading the things that he had out there. The too long didn't read summary of this is that for all the promise that USB-C still holds, the implementation has been sort of haphazard at best. It's sort of a grab bag of what you're going to be able to get, what it's going to be able to support, and it's just sort of a mess right now. I mean, that's not to denigrate those that want to use USB-C. I mean, there's many cases for it, but knowing whether or not it's going to support Thunderbolt, whether or not it's going to support fast charging, the quality of the cable, there's a lot of unknowns there. So I know this is something that affects you a lot, Jim. What did you think about that article?
All right. So first off, anytime I hear the word denigrate, I think of Bob Newhart, and he's got that great quote, which is, "I don't mean to denigrate people who like country music." And for the people who out there who like country music, denigrate means to put down.
That is a really deep cut that you got there. That's a good joke. Some good Bob Newhart for the win.
Yeah, I really love that joke. I actually really like that article as well. It's funny, you posted it to our Telegram, and you're like, "Hey, you know, did you check this out?" And I was like, "I've already put that in the show notes." I was so like into that article, because for those of you listen, I'm not real big about getting the show notes started myself. So for me to actually put something in there and get something started means that I was really into the article. Oh yeah, it hit a real bad spot for me. I mean, USB-C, it might as well be like it's the same plug, but oh, this one's for audio and this one's for powering your laptop. But they have they look exactly the same and they're called exactly the same, but they operate completely differently. It's almost like we haven't quite went that far with USB-C, but it's, you know, does it support
Thunderbolt 3? Yeah.
What's it? Thunderbolt 3. You know, does it not support Thunderbolt 3? Does it charge? Does it not charge? What kind of charge voltage does it support? I've been trying to get a new hub from Anchor for the last 2 weeks from Amazon. I ordered it because I wanted it for my trip this past week up to Connecticut. It didn't come in, so I canceled it because I shipped to an Amazon locker and it wouldn't, you know, they would have sent it back anyway by the time I got home on Friday. So I ordered it again for it to be at my house this Saturday. Of course, it didn't make it again. It's like the upgraded Anchor USB-C hub. It's got HDMI, a couple of USB 3s, and Ethernet. That's the big one. It's basically got video and Ethernet on the same hub, which the one I have now doesn't do that. It's only got HDMI and like a couple of card reader slots that I would never, ever, ever use, and then the USB slot. I've been trying to get this new Anchor hub that I could travel with, so I don't have to carry quite as many dongles and things around, because I'm living on the road even more so now than I was earlier, because I'm in St. Louis or I'm in Connecticut. You know, before it was just like I could leave stuff at my desk in St. Louis for when I was there, but now I'm not necessarily there every week, you know, so I'm home in Dallas, I'm in St. Louis, I'm in Connecticut. Right now I'm talking from Mississippi, so I'm just all over the place here lately, and it'd be nice if I had one hub that would do what I needed when I needed, and you know, it's been a difficult process. That seems like the best one out there. If I could get Amazon to actually ship it to me.
See, I don't have anything that runs on USB-C, but the thing that kind of stood out to me in reading Marco's article, right, was in the back of my head, I could hear Steve Jobs when he was talking about Blu-ray being a big bag of hurt, right? So is USB-C really Blu-ray 2.0 in the Apple ecosystem, or just in the PC ecosystem right now? Because one of the follow-ons in the article that Marco wrote was, this is going to be replaced in another year or two or three with a different device that hopefully does everything that we expected USB-C to do.
I mean, that's true of everything, right? That's going to eventually happen to everything. But, you know, I've thought a lot about this, and if it weren't for the Thunderbolt capability on the Macs, I have to wonder if they would even have USB-C on the new Macs. Because when I look at my older MacBook Pro with Thunderbolt 2, it used the mini display cable, right? The mini display port was the Thunderbolt port. That was a great utility slot for me, just for like from all of my monitors, right? They all have the mini display port on the back. Whenever I plug into my external monitors with my older Macs, I mean, my older MacBook, it's into that Thunderbolt mini DisplayPort. So if I had a newer one, that would be really all I'd be using it for, is that Thunderbolt capability to hook to something else. I kind of wish they'd been able to accomplish Thunderbolt 3 with a mini DisplayPort, because I think we wouldn't even be seeing all of this agitation over this.
Right. I mean, I honestly kind of blame Apple for some of this, you know, because with, like you said, we, you know, with the mini DisplayPort, they kind of tagged on Thunderbolt 2. And now with USB, you know, C, they kind of tagged on Thunderbolt 3 because it does have that capability there. But when they did that, they kind of had their own spec for how those things should work. And then everybody else was already using USB-C, kind of like everybody had used USB before that, where it wasn't necessarily meant to be like a everything cable. You know, you could do video, you can do audio, you can do power, you know, you could do everything over USB-C, data, you know, everything's there. I mean, honestly, you're going to end up with compatibility issues because it does so many things. And I think Apple was just like, well, you know, this is how we're going to do it. And we're, you know, they were the first ones with that, the MacBook that had the one USB-C port, and that was it, which is still stupid. I mean, come on, you know, at least put two on there, or at least one on each side or something. I don't know. That's still stupid. I mean, at least put two on there. But, you know, mine's got four on it. And honestly, sometimes I have stuff plugged into all four.
I would take for the MacBook, the 2015 MacBook, which I think was the first one to have the single USB-C port, I would argue that was actually okay. But I would argue for the Pro, I think they could have avoided a lot of agitation if they had stuck a single USB-A connector on that MacBook Pro and maybe kept the MagSafe for charging. If they had done that and slowly introduced the Pro line to have USB-C, but still some of the mixture of the old features, I think a lot of this irritation would have gone away. The regular MacBook, the 2015, having the single port, they're trying to market that as something in between a full-fledged Mac and an iPad. Okay, fine. You want to give it one port? I could be on board with that. You want everybody to use iCloud or Dropbox or whatever? Okay, I can be on board with that. But for the Pro has always had an abundance of ports. So that's the part that's sort of kind of heartbreaking. Like on my Mac, I regularly use the HDMI slot on my MacBook Pro when I travel and I go and I have to hook into a projector or something like that. So taking those ports away, I can really see that. I think they just handled this badly. I think if they had just had one USB slot, USB-A, and kept the MagSafe for one more generation of the MacBook Pro, I think a lot of this stuff would have been sort of a non-starter for a lot of people.
Have either one of y'all ever seen a Mac, like the newer MacBook, in the wild? Have you ever seen one anywhere? I don't know anybody who owns one. I've never seen one at a Starbucks. I have never seen one of those things outside of the Apple Store.
I actually saw one last week. We had a consultant come in, and he had one as a loaner while his other primary MacBook was getting fixed.
MacBook or MacBook Pro was getting fixed?
Sorry, MacBook Pro getting fixed.
See, there you go.
Yeah, it probably has a stuck space bar. We can put that in the show notes.
I would agree. I haven't seen them, but then again, I haven't been looking that close to see how many I would normally. If I see a MacBook, I don't glance at it to see, is that got a single USB-C port? Or I just go, oh, that must be a MacBook. It's either a MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro. I don't even think about the regular MacBook. I wonder how successful that particular model's been.
Like I said, I've never seen one. I don't know anybody who owns one, and I've never told anybody to go buy one. Like, if anybody ever asks me what to buy, you know, generally I always recommend the 13-inch MacBook Pro, even the one now with the touch bar that, with the dreaded keyboard from hell, you know, still it's still the best Mac in my opinion, if you need a laptop, right? I mean, obviously your 5K one is probably the nicest thing they're making now, in my opinion, as far as customer satisfaction. I haven't heard anybody that's had one that's not just over the top about the screen and everything else. They have no problems with it at all. Versus, you know, the new MacBook Pros, which have been, you know, we're right almost at a year, right? Didn't they come out last October is when the Touch Bar came out?
Yep.
I don't think there's been a whole lot of people that have had good things to say about this MacBook over the last year.
I think that original MacBook was kind of a stopgap product, because in the intervening time since that's been out, you've had the multiple models of the iPad Pro, which arguably would serve more as a consumption device for people than that entry-level MacBook would. Because that entry-level MacBook was a... forget the chip that was in it, but it was an older Intel. Like, it was really underpowered. It was like a
Celeron or something. I'm making that up. But
Core M or something. What was it?
Yeah, it was either Core M or Core Duo. It wasn't in the I series, that's for sure.
Yeah, that seemed like more of a stopgap product, because if all you're doing is consumption, which is really all that seemed like it was geared toward, or very light general computing, you'd be much better off spending the same amount of money and getting an iPad Pro, I think.
I mean, it was basically like, we don't want to put Retina in a
MacBook Air.
In a MacBook Air, so let's make something new. And what else can we do to differentiate it? And hey, let's take away all the ports.
Well, again, I think they were designing it to be more simplistic, like an iPad. Like the use case was, if you're going to use this, you're not doing any sort of serious video editing, audio editing, running virtual machines, the same type of things you would normally expect for a use case. But too long, didn't read, USB-C, still problematic, despite the promise that it holds. But yeah, I'm going to enjoy linking to that article for anyone who hasn't seen it, because it is good, and it's pretty honest. I think Marco was one of the folks too that was there for a while, used to rail on the Lightning versus USB-C, and something, you know, we've talked about a lot as well.
So just to point out here, I'm recording, and I had to order a special cable that is USB-C to mini USB to go in my microphone, because Brian yelled at me so much because I was running through a hub plugging in my microphone. So I ordered a special cable that's, like I said, USB-C to mini USB. I bet there's like five total uses in the world for this thing, and one of them is to plug in these microphones like this into this MacBook without a hub. That's about it.
In my defense, it always sounded like your microphone was hooked to a lightsaber before, so it was like, like there's this persistent hum in the background. It's like, what is he doing over there? Is he chewing on a power line at the same time he's recording? I don't understand this. Does he have like a defib hooked to his chest, hooked to his nipples while he's recording? What is he doing?
Yeah, that's those fancy hubs out there that aren't worth a damn still.
That's one thing that's been consistent about the history of USB, is that hubs usually are of varying quality and they stink a large amount of the time. So let's see, a couple of other things. Speaking of Anker, and you know, you were talking about your Anker hub, my Anker PowerCore Plus battery is having major, major issues. That was the first time I've had to return an Anker product to Anker under warranty. So let's hope that that gets fixed. And it's a USB-C problem. So I was using, you know, I've been, for whatever reason, I haven't traveled a lot this year, but the last couple of weeks I've been to Boston and Miami and, you know, just traveling all over the place. And I like using the fast charging feature for my iPad Pro. And every time I would plug in my Lightning cable, this battery is special. You have to turn on the battery as you plug in the USB-C cable. It's like doing a little dance to make the fast charging work. Every time I would do it, I would turn it on, plug it into the iPad. It would immediately turn the battery off. I do it again, try different combinations, nothing. So all of my fast charging has been broken. But Anker's process has been pretty good. I sent them the shipping label they sent me was a one-day label, so it made it from Georgia to Rancho Cucamonga, I believe it was, in one day. So that's pretty good, and hopefully I'll have a replacement battery by the end of the week. But that's a really good battery. It's a 26,800 milliamp hour battery with fast charging, and I had no problems with it. It was the only battery I was taking with me, using it for everything, and now I don't have it. So I'm going to have to use one of my older standby Anker batteries until the new one arrives.
Now, is that one of the ones where you can actually take two USB-C cables at the same time from a wall outlet and a super speed charge the Anker itself?
Not two. It has a single USB-C and I think dual USB-A ports on it. So if you want to fast charge the battery, if you plug into the USB-C slot, you can fast charge the battery as well. So that's nice if you're going to go on a trip and you remember, oh crap, the night before I got to charge this thing. You can charge it in like an hour, hour and a half from dead instead of like 4 hours over USB-A. So that's a nice feature of the battery. And that seemed to work. It was just charging the iPad. It didn't want to do that. And I've used two different Lightning cables. The USB-C Lightning. I have one that's 1 meter and one that's two, and both of them had the same issue. So that was kind of problematic. It points toward a battery issue. But again, the instructions say, turn on battery before plugging in USB-C cable and to initiate fast charging. So you can't even just plug it in and then turn the battery on and have it work. That's the sort of weird, janky type of situation we have with USB-C.
I've had the same issue with my biggest battery that I have. It sounds exactly like that one, but I think this one I have is Aukey. AUKEY, which is, you know, like an Anker, basically same type thing. Same thing, it's got two USB-A ports on there and then one USB-C port. And I thought it was dying on me. Like it would charge, but then it wasn't working. You know, the little LED light would shine on it. You could turn that on, but I couldn't get it to charge anything. And then last night, I actually got it to start charging my iPad Pro. And I must have done what you said. I didn't even like RTFM, you know, to know that I needed to like turn it on first. I must have just happened to have turned it on, but I was literally thinking I was going to have to send that battery back because because of the issue. But then last night it finally, I plugged it in and kind of let it sit there to see if it would keep charging, and it was. So I'm probably going to start carrying that one because I can use it on everything and I can use it with the Switch as well. But that's not the one I've been carrying. I've got like a 20,000 that's a lot lighter than that one is. But that's a pretty big brick.
It is, but it's so worth it being able to fast charge an iPad. You can actually charge a MacBook with it. You can do a lot with it. So that's the reason that was my go-to battery. So if I'm traveling and I'm sitting in a coffee shop or something and I'm worried that I'm going to exhaust my iPad, just leaving it plugged in behind the iPad was a nice little way to not worry about anything, because we're all OCD about our power. And it's a great battery otherwise, but the fact that we have to go through these little hoops that we can't just plug the cable in and it automatically works that's also a whole, don't get me started on fast charging, but you know, sort of a strange thing, but so far we'll see what the Anker replacement battery does for me. Let's see, since the last time I talked to you, I bought some Watch Dots and it took them a long time to arrive. I say a long time, it took 2 weeks, which I guess isn't a long time in the grand scheme of things, but when you're accustomed to, you order it and 3 days later it's there, and it wasn't there. It took me a little while to get them, but now the red crown on my watch is fully black and you can't really see it. So I have the LTE, but I don't advertise that I have the LTE. And it looks pretty good. I have no complaints. I had to use two, though, because if I put one on there, and these are supposed to be the XL, they call them, you could still see if you looked really close, just a little hint of red. And since they send you three dots in a pack, I was like, let's see if I can sort of move this around a little bit. And sure enough, I did. So it's not noticeable, which is nice.
I will say that the red does stick out considerably worse on the black watches than the either aluminum or, you know, plain stainless. My wife just got the new black with the Milanese Loop stainless model. And for some reason, like, I really notice her red watch dot, but on my standard stainless model, I don't notice it as much.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, you waited forever because there's probably so many people ordering them damn watch dots. And number two, damn Apple for us, but you know, for people having to spend $800 on a watch and then having to order stickers to replace something that you don't like about it. That definitely goes down on the old checklist of this wouldn't happen if Steve was alive.
did we ever get an official response out of Apple as to why they did that? I mean, I've read all sorts of speculation as to why, but did we actually ever get any kind of official, we did it because of this?
I don't think they ever justify their design decisions, especially when it's something that's aesthetic like that. But if I had to guess, they needed some way to signify LTE versus non-LTE. I mean, if you took three, Series 1, Series 2, and Series 3, or even the Series 0 that disappeared pretty quickly, and you had them all side by side, you wouldn't be able to tell them apart. I still have my Series 2 sitting right here, and if I had that right next to my Series 3, I wouldn't know which one was which, honestly, because the form factor has not changed one bit. As a matter of fact, I wish I could just pop the crown off the Series 2 and put it on the Series 3, and I would have been just happy with that.
I would not attempt that, sir.
No. I know better than that. Don't want to invalidate that Apple Care that I bought for it. But yeah, you want to talk about annoying spending 500 something on a watch and having to spend another 10 to get the stickers to go over it to make sort of a cheesy solution did not make me happy. And I got to give a shout out to the WatchDots folks for dealing and answering to all my emails of, has it shipped yet? Has it shipped yet? Am I going to get it yet? When's it coming? Please let me know. I really want my dots.
You know, an alternate solution, we could start up a little side business and just take a little nail polish and put over that. That'd probably work.
Or just a black Sharpie. That might work too. Though if you do want different colored watch dots, if you're bothered not by the fact that it's not black, but you just don't like red, they sell them in an abundance of colors. And I guess ostensibly they did this originally so that if you had like a lime green band and you wanted a lime green crown and button on it, you could do the same thing. Because they send you the buttons to go along with it, the dock button, I guess is what I call it. But so I have those, I just have no use for them.
Ah, so that's interesting. So these dots existed pre-LTE.
Yes.
They just got a whole new market. Damn, talk about stumbling onto something.
They really did, because I think before it was purely for, hey, I have a multicolored watch band and I want to make my watch match the rest of it. So not a bad idea, but wow.
What was it they used to call it Sherlocked, right? Or
yeah,
something Sherlocking, like that?
When you invent a product and then Apple invent, well, that's a different thing.
Yeah, this is like the anti.
This is,
that's what
this
I was going to say.
Reverse
this is
Sherlock.
The anti Sherlocking. The Apple invented something that made the thing they make even like so much more popular. It's like the reverse Sherlock.
Can we have our show title? I do like the watch dot though. It is a nice thing. It is nice to have that as a fully black watch again. So another thing that happened over the last week and a half is Movies Anywhere launched. Have you guys seen this yet? Have you played with it at all?
I haven't played with it. You know, reading about it sounds pretty interesting. But all my consumption devices have some sort of Apple device already hooked up to them, right? Where, you know, I'm either consuming on an iPhone, an iPad, a MacBook, a Mac Pro, or Apple TV, right? So for me, I'm not sure that I'm the target audience for this.
So I have about 300 some odd movies inside of iTunes, and that's always been my primary consumption case as well. I've always bought everything inside of there. Occasionally, I will get a title that would give me an ultraviolet code, but it wouldn't give me an iTunes code. So I would just launch, you know, I mean, I'm going to claim that even if I never had any intention of using it. I've had the ultraviolet since it launched in what? You know, I don't know, years ago, but never used it. I would put titles into it, but only if there was no corresponding iTunes code, and then just sort of forgot about it. Like, they sat there, and it's like, great, what do I use to use this? And if you've never used Ultraviolet, it is, you know, talk about a bag of hurt.
Yeah, it's pretty awful.
It is the worst designed thing ever. It's like, do I watch this through Flixster? Oh, wait, no, Flixster doesn't exist anymore. Do I use Vudu? Okay, Vudu works, but what about, you know, I had like four accounts or something scrambled across all of these providers, and I had to unify the libraries. It was a mess. Like, it really, honest to God, sucked. I don't know. This is why it floundered and nobody used it. Unfortunately, this solves a problem that we're about to not have anymore, because really the only use case that I had for this was if I wanted to pop over to my Fire Stick to watch Amazon, which still isn't available on Apple TV, but more on that in a minute, then I wouldn't have access to any of my iTunes content. Well, now I could pop over to my Fire Stick, and all of my iTunes content, for the most part, minus Paramount and Lionsgate movies, are all there. Great. Now, and we're hearing that the Amazon app may launch this week by about Thursday or so. That's the rumor. So had this existed, I don't know, a couple years ago, oh, this would have been great. Now, not so much. But it is nice to have HD copies of all of my movies. And if you've linked the services up, I guess they gave you 3 free movies. I think they gave you like Big Hero 6 and a couple others. So I tied in my Google account, my Amazon account, my iTunes account, and then I would log into each one of these services. And sure enough, they're all there. Like, all of my iTunes movies, for the most part, are in Amazon, and they're in Vudu and Google Play, which I never use. So I had done this before. This was a spinoff of the Disney Anywhere service, which I don't know if you guys had used that, but if you got a Blu-ray or something like that through Disney, like one of the, I buy a lot of Marvel and Star Wars movies. When you register those things, when you go to claim them, if you create a Disney Anywhere account, it would take all of your Disney purchases and put them on all these devices. So for the longest time, the only content that I had on my Fire Stick or my Roku or whatever was the Marvel or Disney movies that I already owned. So I was already kind of familiar with the concept. So this is kind of nice. The one thing to note, if you buy it through iTunes, remember you get the 4K upgrade for free? Well, those are only valid if you buy them through iTunes. So if you had content that was in Vudu or Flixster or whatever your ultraviolet provider was, and it ports over to your iTunes, because it does flow in the other direction. All of your Amazon or Google Play or Vudu, whatever content will come into iTunes as well. None of that gets the free 4K upgrade. So be advised. You still benefit from putting it in iTunes first. At least until the others decide to follow suit and do those types of things, but I don't know.
That makes sense. So it almost kind of sounds like to me like Disney created an iTunes match for video that you don't have to pay $25 a year for.
Pretty much.
I just have to admit that I haven't read the article and I wasn't aware of all of this, but I'm definitely going to have to catch up on it and borrow some more of Brian's movies.
One last thing about the Movies Anywhere is I go to a site called cheapcharts.de. every day, and they will list movies, TV shows, and whatnot that are on sale in iTunes. So you can get a lot of great content for, I always hit the ones that are $4.99. That seems to be where the studio catalog titles, the lowest they seem to drop. So for $5, I'll see whatever HD titles are out there that day or this week, and I'll stock up on them. It's nice to know that if I do that, a lot of times I can get the free 4K upgrade inside of iTunes, but at the very least, the 1080p content still propagates to all the other services. Not that I'll use them, but, you know, it's a way to bolster my entire library with an emphasis on iTunes first and the higher quality on iTunes first. So, good to know, and I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, I actually need to check that out, because I've now ended up with, I don't know, $200 or $300 of iTunes credit, because for a while there, every time I saw the deal, you know, usually it's like $85 for a $100 gift card on eBay, I would buy one just because I would, you know, just reload. But I don't buy apps anymore, at least not that often anymore, because, I mean, the app store, you know, to me, it's not that there's not good apps out there, but they're just, I've got them. I mean, if somebody upgrades something and it's a paid upgrade, I'll pay for it. But I'm just not buying apps near like I used to. Like, I used to buy, you know, a couple of apps a week just to try them out. But now I'm kind of settled into, this is what I use, this is what I like. And then, you know, it's been kind of weird, like stuff like, oh, I'm drawing a blank. What's the email we all use?
Spark.
You know, it's like free, right? I mean, a lot of this stuff is free. So the only thing that's been coming out of my iTunes is my Hulu subscription. Like, that's the only money that's really being spent out of my iTunes account, because I also paid for a year's worth of Apple Music with one of those $100 gift cards that I bought. I just paid for a whole year. So I've got like a big, you know, a big, nice, fat credit on my iTunes account. I need to start checking that site and buying some movies every now and then.
I chuckle too, because I'm pretty addicted to those $100 gift cards for $85. As I sit here and look at my iTunes account, I've got a credit of $313.62.
I wish I had that problem. I spend every cent I put in there. But I'm more of a fan of the 4x gas points from Kroger is what I typically tend to do more than the other gift cards. But no, I'm right there with you. You don't get 300 movies in your iTunes account if you don't like to buy stuff in iTunes. So still, it's kind of a neat service. So let's move on to the Amazon Prime on Apple TV. When can we expect it? Well, it's a guy who claims to work on that product inside of Amazon posted to Reddit. There's been a thread over in the Apple TV subreddit where they've been talking about this. And he swears up and down that we're probably going to see it on October 26th, which should be this Thursday. Or maybe it's already happened if you're listening to this and it's after that date. Fingers crossed on this one. There's several things that are sitting there on Amazon that I'm wanting to watch, and I just won't pop over to my Fire Stick ever because it's like, well, I know this is coming. I'll just wait till that happens. I just wish they would hurry up and do this stupid thing already.
I wish they would do it, but I'm also curious to know if the first iteration, if they're going to have 4K content coming out of Amazon for the Apple TV 4K.
I think a better question is, will you be able to buy any content from Amazon through the Apple TV app? Because I know that's been a sticking point with Amazon and Apple going back to the Steve Jobs days of the margins were so thin on a lot of what they did. They didn't want to give up the 30% cut.
I doubt it, because like even today, right, I'm an Audible subscriber. In order for me to get Audible content, I can search the directory in my Audible app. I can find stuff. I can download samples. But if I want to buy it, I actually have to, you know, get out of Audible, go to Safari, log into Audible through the web, and purchase it through the web. So I'm completely out of the Apple ecosystem at that point.
So 2 points here. First off, Audible, I got a trial subscription a month or two ago, and I listened to a podcast series on there called The Butterfly Effect, which was really, really good. It was kind of like a serial type thing. Well, not serial. I don't know. It's, you know, one of those kind of story podcasts. I mean, it was just a really good series. It was really well done. The guy who narrates it he's got kind of a weird voice, but it was real good. So, Jason, if you're looking for something to listen to on Audible, it's free on Audible, but it's an Audible podcast. It's called The Butterfly Effect.
I have to check that out.
And number two, this conversation we started talking about Apple TV reminded me to mention that I hooked my HD Home Run back up a week or two or three ago after we talked about it on the podcast. It's still not as perfect as just having the antenna going into the TV, but it seems to be working a little bit better. And so I set up the DVR in Plex, and that's really sharp. I've actually, that's really neat. Like, I can say, hey, record Saturday Night Live. And it's not like I can't watch it on Hulu the next day or whatever, but just the fact that it was that easy to tell Plex, hey, here's this HD home run on my network. It finds it. It downloads the correct guide for, you know, for your area, and you can just tell it to start recording things, which was really sharp.
Welcome to where I was a year ago. Now, go out and get yourself ComSkip or MCE Buddy or one of those and integrate it with your Plex, and it will automatically analyze your recordings and either remove the commercials automatically, or it will change where the commercial breaks where it thinks they are into chapter skips that you can skip on the Apple TV by holding down the right button to skip through it. So that's extra bonus points. I love the DVR functionality on Plex. It is amazing.
Ooh, nice. That'll be one of these days when I actually spend more than a day or two in Dallas, that'll be my next little hack.
It is nice. And what I've started doing, just to go off on down the rabbit hole for just a moment, I have a really fast gaming PC, and that's where my Plex DVR lives. And the transcoding that was responsible for doing all this, I've told it now to just not transcode, just keep the TS file uncompressed. An hour-long TV show might be 6 gigs or something, but I just say, hey, go through, slice the commercials, slap it back over, don't do any sort of compression or make it smaller, just keep it the way it is so it'll go fast. It's kind of nice that you watch it, let's say your show comes on at like 9 p.m., A lot of this stuff won't hit Hulu to the next day. I'm a guy who gets up super early, like really early, long before it hits Hulu in most cases. And if I want to watch it to know before I go to the gym or something that it's already there, and the moment that it would finish recording, it went and removed the commercials or made chapters out of them. It's great to just be able to have your own Hulu in your house, kind of. Hulu in your house. That would have been a great title too.
So we'll find all these links in the show notes.
I will link to the guide that I used that was incredibly helpful. And now that the fall TV season's back up, over the summer I didn't really use it at all. There were no new episodes of anything. But I've actually taken it and gone beyond what some of those things are. Like if you have Play On and you integrate ComSkip and MCE Buddy with Play On, let's say you're like me and you watch a lot of those superhero shows on the CW, they still have commercials in them because they pull them from Hulu and they stick their own ads in there. If you run the MCE Buddy against those Play On recordings, they are much more accurate about removing the commercials because there's clear stops in between them. Like you can tell when it transitions, and MCE Buddy can deal with that very, very well. So if you can wait till the next day, it'll go through, grab it, doesn't transcode at all, just goes through, slices the commercials, throws it into a file, puts in all the data right there in your Plex, bing, bang, boom. The downside is those recordings are 720p, but if you're doing it over HD Home Run, you can get them in full 1080p, which is very, very nice.
Very cool. Very cool. I'll have to check all that out and see if I can level up.
Oh, you can definitely level up. It looks like Apple has landed its first real, quote-unquote real, TV series. And it's going to be a revival of the 80s anthology TV show Amazing Stories. I'm very, very excited about this. Did you guys watch Amazing Stories when it was on in the 80s?
I did not.
Am I the only one that... I wish Brad was here right now. Brad couldn't join us this week.
I don't even know what that is, Brian.
So Amazing Stories, back in the 80s, travel back in time with me, kids, to the mid-80s, there was this anthology TV series revival. Like, they revived The Twilight Zone, and they revived, stuff like that for a while, and Amazing Stories was a Steven Spielberg show. And it was kind of like, it wasn't really horror, it was more like, you know, a weird anthology with a twist type of story. There was one where there was a kid who collected every single toy, and, you know, he was told if he did this, he would have all these treasures, and, you know, he ends up, I think it was played by Mark Hamill at the very end, and, you know, he's destitute, and he'd collected all this stuff his entire life, and at the very end of the episode, somebody sees something that he has and it starts paying off. That sounds kind of lame when I describe it, but I promise you, it was very well done. It was a Steven Spielberg show.
Is it like a Twilight Zone or maybe Black Mirror for the 80s?
It was kind of like Twilight Zone, but not always. You know how Twilight Zone was always kind of depressing? Like, there wasn't a lot of uplifting sort of stories that came out of it. Kind of like cautionary tales usually were what those were. Sort of like The Outer Limits or something like that. They had a fair share of those on The Amazing Stories. Some of those would be, you know, kind of a downer type of things, but a lot of them were sort of optimistic type endings. You know, there was one guy who wished his family was replaced by TV characters, and throughout the entire episode, the roles of his family were played by popular TV show characters from the 80s. And it was more like a be careful what you wish for, but at the end, he was grateful for what he had. Like, there was a lot of good episodes. I'm pretty sure a lot of these have been posted on YouTube. If you go looking for them, I'm sure you can find them. I am glad that they're redoing it, though.
It is. This definitely sounds like something Brad would know about, too. So, yeah, me and Jason strike out on this one.
Spielberg gives them immediate sense of credibility, right? The carpool karaoke that we've seen has kind of not been what a lot of people expected.
Planet of the Apes was pretty terrible, too.
That was old before App ever got it. I mean, you know, Corden, like the first six of them were pretty good, you know, and then once you have Adele, then everything's downhill from there. I mean, you know, it's Adele and then everything's downhill.
That was the best one.
Right. I mean, everything's downhill from Adele. I mean, that could be another show title. So we got a lot of them here today.
So what I'm most curious about is what does Apple's service look like a year from now? Right. Are they going to be an HBO? Are they going to be more of a Netflix? Is this going to be a service that you're paying a monthly fee for? Or is it just going to be something that holds people to the Apple ecosystem or pulls more people into owning Apple TVs? I'm just kind of curious where they're going to go with this.
Well, unlike Netflix and Amazon already had catalogs of other people's content to form a full-fledged video service. Right now, Apple doesn't have any of that. So what they've done is by pinning it on the back of Apple Music, it's like, hey, come for Apple Music, stay for a couple of extra TV shows. I don't think that going forward long-term, I would be surprised if it's still a part of Apple Music in a year. Like, that would be a big big mistake, in my opinion. If they rolled out a Prime-like service where you got to subscribe to several different things and TV was one of it, that would be great. But you're not going to be able to leave that as part of, you have to have Apple Music to get it. I just don't see that happening. It's a branding problem, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's a branding problem because you're calling something Apple Music, but you're like, hey, come here to watch TV shows. That'll just confuse the hell out of people and nobody will pay for it.
Why do they still call it iTunes when it hasn't been about tunes solely in, you know, over a decade? That's another thing that I think they should fix, but that's just so ingrained.
Right. Well, they're trying to get back there, yeah. At least. Maybe.
The TV app, being the way that you access all of this content right now on iOS and Apple TV, is a good harbinger for things to come, I think. I think that's how they're going to do it. I don't see it being available on other services, that's for sure. I know that Apple Music right now is available on Android on phones, so I guess theoretically you could probably watch some of those shows existing on an Android phone if you wanted to, but I see this as bring people into the Apple ecosystem. Otherwise, they have no differentiator at this point. And they're not about cross-platform compatibility. I mean, yeah, iTunes exists on Windows and Apple Music's on Android, but I don't know. That's what I think. I think it's going to be all about original content, but they're going to need to marry something with an existing library of some sort, or they're going to really pale in comparison to Netflix and Amazon in that regard. Well, it's been kind of a slow week, and I know we're going to have the iPhone 10 pre-order. So next week, I look forward to us talking about that and how we fared when it came to the iPhone 10 bounty and whether or not we're able to do it.
The Great American iPhone 10 Lottery.
Indeed. We're going to, may the odds be ever in your favor, Verizon subscribers, while us Apple folks get our TSA pre-check on for the iPhone 10, so to speak.
You know, I'm really hoping they make you wait like an extra week and that the Verizon guys actually get it early.
You might. You very well might. Who knows? I mean, I think everyone's going to be charging down the Apple Store path that, you know, maybe the carriers come out ahead on this. You never can tell. But I feel like no matter how quick I am on the draw, even with a pre-qualification, that come 3:01 a.m. Eastern this Friday, I am still going to probably going to say something like January or something like that, which will be, this will be the longest I've ever owned an iPhone ever.
Same here.
So far, we're already into uncharted territory because we're about, 14 months in to the same model. And if you tack on another 6 weeks or whatever to that, then who knows?
Yeah, this bee's getting old. I'm getting tired of her. I'm ready for a new one.
Hey, that's why we're on upgrade programs, right? That's the whole thing. We pay a monthly fee. We hope to get the new one pretty quick. So fingers crossed. I'm ready to get rid of the home button. Give me some new problems to complain about, to talk about on this podcast. That's what I want.
I'm sure we'll have our fair share.
And it's a good chance that we'll have that and no one else will, or relatively few people will. So, hey, here's hoping. Well, folks, that should about do her this week. I guess we'll talk to you next week. Have a good week, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.